Hi, welcome everyone. Thanks for attending the session on Config Manager 2012, the overview. My name is Mark Florida, and...
I'm Wally Mead. I'm eye candy.
So what I wanted to do to get started was just sort of give you a quick recap for people that don't know. For the most part, we've started Configuration Manager and really client management in general at Microsoft as being very device-focused. We focused on sort of managing machines, we focused on managing groups, laptops, servers, and our products have evolved over time. We've gone from SMS to Configuration Manager, all the way now to where we have a cloud offering of Intune. And what we're gonna really talk about in this session is how we've now started to put in place a lot of functionality to embrace the consumerization of IT with inside Configuration Manager 2012. When we think about consumerization, one of the biggest challenges we have is that it's really a pull between what the end users want and what the administrator is willing to give up. And it's not so much what they're willing to give up, it's that they have their own pressures. They have pressures of, you know, what are my company standards? What are my standards to keep people protected? How do I keep them productive? How do I, you know, deal with these challenges? And that's what we, as part of the Config Manager team, are really trying to focus on providing solutions around. The other thing is around connectivity. You know, how do I make sure that these people can be productive wherever they are? Where we've made some improvements in this area as well, which we'll talk about later. Now, when we think about consumerization, really the first thing that kind of comes to mind is that it's really about managing the user, not necessarily their device. When you manage a user, then what you're really talking about is managing them and their experiences on multiple devices. You know, we've moved past the days where a single user has a single device. We now have a scenario where most users have, you know, a laptop and then they have a companion device, whether it be a smartphone, or maybe users just have multiple, you know, traditional devices that we think about, like a desktop or a laptop. The key there is that it's really about managing the user and making sure their experience works across those devices. The other new dynamic that's coming into play as well in the enterprise is that the devices are not necessarily ones that are, you know, owned by the corporation. You know, we're seeing with the bring your own device scenarios where people are bringing in their own devices to work. And how we manage those going forward will be, you know, a challenge we hope to kind of carry through to you in our product set. The other thing too is how do we keep, you know, how do we keep the experience secure? How do we balance what the administrator needs in terms of making sure the applications are not only provided to the end user, but the data and the applications are provided in a way that's secure and meets your IT policies. So that really takes us to some of the pillars that we looked at to focus on with Configuration Manager 2012. The first one that I'm going to go over is really about how we empower end users. So when we think about empowering end users, what the focus was on was how do we provide applications to users and how do we manage applications to users on a myriad of different devices, not just about supporting, you know, not just supporting delivery on your traditional laptop, but how do we enable those end users to be productive on their mobile devices as well? How do we make sure that their security and their policies can be applied on their mobile devices so that they can gain access to corporate resources? So with application delivery, what we wanted to really focus on was really simplifying the administrative workflow. You know, I shouldn't say today anymore since the product's been released, but in years past, the way administrators used to deal with delivering software to users was typically through Excel. They would basically figure out, here are all the devices that a user might be interacting with or the one device they might be interacting with, and then the Config Manager admin had to translate that information into a deployment construct that we have in our product. For example, if I wanted to deploy software to Wally, I'd first have to figure out what is Wally's machine and then end up targeting software directly to that machine. That model ends up being cumbersome, ends up being, you know, very sort of, you know, time sent, you know, requires a lot of time in order for you to keep that information up to date. And that's one of the key things that we look to really try to understand was understand who the user is and understand the relationship that the user has to their various devices. What you can kind of see across the bottom of the screen there is really a statement of the user, again, is not just hitting a particular device. They may not be hitting just even physical devices. They might be hitting remote desktops. They might be hitting VDI instances. And the key there is to try to, again, focus on delivering applications to a user wherever they might go. So what I'll show you later in a demo is how we made this simple for the admin with inside the Configuration Manager console to be able to create applications and then be able to assign or deploy those applications directly to the user. and then let Configuration Manager sort of figure out the right way in which to install that software on those devices for you. Key to that is what we call the user-device relationship. You'll see it manifest in our product as we call it user-to-device affinity. What that notion is a concept around a primary machine. It's understanding the difference between, let's say a laptop I'll log into versus one that maybe I just use for a temporary period of time, like a kiosk or a temporary workstation that might be assigned to me. Understanding that relationship, really understanding what a primary device is, can then be very useful to the administrator when they think about providing applications to an end user. For example, you may not want to provide an application in a native installation, like a Windows installer form, on a device that you're just visiting, like a kiosk. Rather, maybe you wish to provide that as a RDS session or as a Citrix application in order to provide the end user that application. So what we have here is the new feature in our product we call Application Management. And really, at the heart of it, what it's trying to do is really kind of uplift our product in the past from software distribution. And by software distribution, I mean packages and programs. For just all intents and purposes, packages and programs is really just script execution. It was basically taking content, calling some installer, and running it. And we had some rudimentary controls you could put around that. There were some platform applicability rules. But in reality, what customers had to do is they had to invest a lot in custom script wrappers, or they had to write or use packaging tools and things like that to basically put their intent in place. For example, if you wanted to, make sure that an application installed only on a corporate machine, you had to write a script in order to determine what exactly a corporate machine is. That process ends up being, very kind of costly. You have to maintain all these scripts, all these separate wrappers around your application. You have to really be tight about how you version and deal with those applications. And those are some of the higher level challenges that we look to take care of when we approach application management. The other kind of pitfall, if you will, when you think about providing applications to users is how do you successfully carry through your intent with packages and programs? One of the things that we wanted to make sure happen was that we really knew what it meant when an application was provided to a user. And that's what we mean by a detection method. A detection method is, the unique fingerprint, if you will, to determine that an application has been installed on a device. By really understanding that information, what we can do is take your admin intent, like I require this user to have this application, and we can periodically check to make sure that that application was successfully installed. The other sort of notion that we put in place too is, command line that you can author for a given application. When you think about a command line, there's a command line that you're most likely familiar with packages and programs. That's the one thing that's afforded there in a program. But what we have in the application model is sort of the notion of command lines, not just to install, but also to uninstall. Again, it's about matching your intent. If you want to require somebody to have an app, then obviously you'd call the install command line. If you want to prohibit or remove an app, then you would call the uninstall command line. Really, the application model provides you that ability to define properly all the different aspects of an application so that Configuration Manager can then go off and satisfy your intent, which then gets us into kind of some deeper relationships you have. That's what we talk about when we think about requirement rules. Requirement rules you can think about as prereqs. Maybe they're sort of fundamental things that just have to be satisfied, sort of laws of nature. This application will not install unless you have enough memory. Or a requirement rule can be more sophisticated. It can be more business logic, such as the one I previously talked about, where a requirement rule could be, let me check to see if this is a corporate machine, and maybe the way in which you determine a corporate machine is by a reg key stamp or by some other AD attribute that you might have for that machine. Or, and with requirement rules, it hopefully gets you out of the business of having to write a lot of rich script wrappers around a given piece of software, and you can instead put that information directly into Configuration Manager. The last two items are really about how do you handle complex deployment scenarios. So with dependencies, as the name implies, it's really just around scenarios that we've had in the past with dependent programs, but it's a much richer model. What we do with dependencies versus what we did with dependent programs in Configuration Manager 2007 is that we evaluate the entire chain of dependencies prior to actually installing an application. So that's a big advantage over 2007, where what would happen is you would just literally run from the leaf of the chain, if you will. You would run one installer, then another, and then another. And if you hit a failure anywhere along that path, then the app itself wouldn't install. Now with the application model, what you can do is really define your requirements in such a way where we can evaluate all the requirements for all of the dependencies right off the bat. That way end users don't get an experience where an app kind of half installs. And then the last one there is around supersedence. That's really kind of a version management feature. So if you kind of think about all the different applications that obviously rev every once in a while, this is a great feature in order for an administrator to be able to define, I have version 1 of an app, version 2 of an app, and I know that I need to be able to retire a previous version. So with our supersedence functionality, you can use that in ways such as, when installing version 2, let me make sure I uninstall version 1, if that's what you need to have happen. So it provides a rich model for you to be able to capture not only the intent of a given application, but again, with dependencies and supersedence, really relationships to other applications as well. So that's kind of all the admin side of what we did with application management. And obviously, if we're talking about delivering software to users and consumerization, then what comes into play is self-service. You know, how can we provide to the end user a way for them to get access to the application that they want or that they need for their job, but at the same time, making sure that that admin intent that I talked about on the previous slide, gets satisfied as well. So what we've done is we've implemented a web-based application catalog. You know, here you kind of see a glimpse of it, and I'll show you more in a demo. From the surface, an end user can browse for a set of applications that has been uniquely targeted to them. So the set of apps that I might see might be different than what Wally might see in the same catalog. And then from that, I can search based on category and some other information to be able to find the app that I'm looking for. In terms of consumerization, you know, as I mentioned before, there's also sort of the notion of end users visiting different types of devices. So with mobile device management, what we implemented in Configuration Manager 2012 was something that we call the Exchange Connector. What the Exchange Connector allows you to do is allows you to set EAS-based policies so that you can manage certain policies like, let's say, a PIN password. Through the Configuration Manager console. And what that affords you as an IT administrator is the ability to define your policies through one console versus having to hop between two different products really in order to deliver the same intent that you might have for a given user. So if you have like a PIN password that you want for a user, you're able to implement that same policy straight into Configuration Manager and it will do the work of talking to Exchange for you. So what I'm going to do is show you a demo real quick. Hopefully this works. So big caveat, this is the first time that we've used pre-beta code in probably about a year and a half, so we'll see how all this stuff comes together. This very first scenario, though, is one that you may have seen in the past. It's really just a kind of a walkthrough at a high level of our application model. So with an application, what we have is a sort of high-level object. We call it literally the application in our console. We have another session later this week where we'll go deeper into that, so I'm not going to go into that right now. With an application, what you can have is you can have multiple deployment types. So what I've done is taken a very simple deployment scenario here, Adobe Reader, and I previously created this application. And with Adobe Reader, as you can see here, is I have a single deployment type, which is based off of Windows Installer. So what you can do is you can define not just, let's say, a deployment type for Windows Installer. You can have AppV. You could have even like a script type of way of deploying it. Basically, there's many different ways to deploy applications, and what we wanted to do is provide an experience where the administrator can manage at the application level, and then they can define all the different ways in which they want to deploy it, and then be able to write rules to control how and when to deploy that application. The other high-level kind of relationship that we have in our product is a deployment. Deployment's very similar to an advertisement in Config Manager in 2007. What I've done is I've previously deployed this out to our all users collection. So what this is going to do is because I've targeted to a user now, it's not and I've set the intent to be available, as you can see on the screen, it's not going to install directly on the end user's machine. Rather, it's going to make the application available in our software, in our application catalog. So this is our application catalog. Again, it has the ability to see a unique set of applications for a given user. What it also has is the ability to be able to request applications that also require approval. So an administrator can define for a given deployment that prior to installing this, the end user has to request approval. So they're able to click request here and fill out some text that basically explains why they should get approval. then on the back end, that app would then be approved, and once it's approved, it can then be available for installation. So what I'm going to do here, just kind of a simple warm-up demo, if you will, is to try to show you what it looks like to install Adobe Reader 9. So what happens is this is just a simple confirmation page to the end user. And then when I click this, you can barely see the text coming across the screen, but what's happening is we're taking this application model, we're taking all the policies that you might have authored on it, and we're evaluating the rules for it. So for example, let's say I have a requirement that says it requires half a gig of RAM. We're proactively checking the machine to make sure it actually has half a gig of RAM before actually trying to kick off the installation. The advantage of that is you don't have to wait for content to come down. You can tell the end user immediately that, sorry, you're not meeting the requirements for that rule. And then what happens here is, whoops, happened pretty fast, sorry about that. What it did in the background, too, is that then once it passed those requirement rules, it downloaded the content and then kicked the installation off for the end user, which shows right here. All right, so that was admittedly a nice, easy warm-up demo for me. So what I'm going to do is cut back to the deck real quick.
And nope.
Which one was it, Wally?
Way over here, PowerPoint.
Okay, so now we're going to get guts here with our demos. So with Configuration Manager 2012 SP1, we put some enhancements in the product. First and foremost is support for Windows 8. So when I talk about support for Windows 8, you can think of that as all the same features that Configuration Manager 2012 has works on the Windows 8 platform. So operating system deployments, software updates, et cetera, will work on Windows 8. What we've also tried to do, too, was make the administrative experience fairly consistent on Windows 8. Windows 8 obviously has a lot of new functionality, but what we didn't want to have happen was to have to retrain IT administrators to be able to manage a Windows 8 device. Certainly there are some new things that you have to understand and truly focus on, but a good example is operating system deployment. We didn't want to have to teach you again about major task sequence changes in order for you to be able to deploy Windows 8. Instead, it's very much the same process that you would go through today to deploy Windows 7. You can now use it to deploy Windows 8. Similar to that is when you think about application management. As I talked about before, a given application can have many different deployment types. So now with Windows 8 and with Windows 8 apps, you can now define in SP1 the ability to model a deployment type for those particular applications as well. The other kind of support areas here is supporting the Intel SoC tablets that will be released. Again, that is supporting all the feature sets that we currently have on those platforms. What's most interesting about that platform is it'll be the first one that will be, or not necessarily the first one, but one that is most likely going to be one that is always connected capable. And as a result of that, there's a different way in which those machines behave. They can go into a low power state fairly quick. They can come up extremely fast. And as a result, the Configuration Manager client had to be adapted to work well on that platform. But really kind of the good news is that even though these platforms sort of behave differently, we took a lot of time to make sure, again, that the IT administrator didn't have to do a whole lot to be able to manage these devices any differently than you might manage your traditional Windows 8 devices. And then the last two items here are really kind of a cross-plat story. So as I talked about consumerization and end users using multiple devices, that also speaks to, obviously, the Mac OS, OS X as a platform that's needed there. And then we also are going to support Linux and Unix, which tends to be a little bit more of a server-side scenario. But again, through Configuration Manager, just the ability to manage multiple device types is important, and we wanted to carry through on that. Some other functionality that we support just in terms of Windows 8 is, again, operating system deployment. While we keep the experience very similar, one of the things to call out, just because I know there's been a lot of asks around whether we will, is we do support Windows to Go. So when we think about Windows to Go, we think of it being very similar to a pre-stage media scenario, one in which you want to be able to create and compose your Windows to Go image and then deploy that down to a USB drive or whatever you wish to use there. So what we'll do is we'll support that in product, and then once we've actually completed the provisioning process, then it becomes very much like any other client. It has a Configuration Manager client running inside the Windows to Go device, and all the sort of run state behaviors maintain the same, or are the same. And then the last piece here I talked about, which again is supporting Win8 apps, supporting deep link apps, and by deep link what I mean is the ability for an administrator to target an application that might be available in the Windows Store. So what you can do is you can define an application, which basically is just a reference pointer to the Windows Store. That, the advantage of that model is that you can provide to your end users a consistent place where they can go to get all the apps that are needed for their role. And then based off of that, we can understand where that app is actually located and redirect the end user directly to the Windows Store so they can get access to that application. And then kind of last on the list, which ties in with tablet support in general, is around network cost support. So when you think about metered connections, you know, 3G, 4G, et cetera, even wireless networks that are coming on play, and take the, you know, tablets where you tend to see more of those connection types coming up, one of the things we wanted to make sure happened was that the IT administrator could have the necessary controls so that they wouldn't be accused of a high network bill at the end of the month. So with this support, it really allows you to be able to control configuration manager mechanics so that if you don't want to, you can block traffic on these metered network connections. You know, like, I think the last thing we want to have happen is some of you do, let's say, a required deployment of Office or something fairly large, and then have that be pushed across a metered network connection only to have a network charge come back at the end of the month. So we put some controls in place in terms of how you can configure the client agent itself so that you can protect yourself in those scenarios. All right, so let's get back into this. And what I'm going to do is show you what it looks like for some of these newer app models. So what we have here is an expense approval application. And again, it's a deployment type that is now a what we call a metro deployment type. What I'm going to do is open up the properties to show you how that might be different from what we support for MSI. So metro applications are actually pretty simple when you think about sort of how you might model them and all the different controls that you might have. Really, as a IT administrator, you need to just supply the appx file, and then we can read the appx file, and as a result, create the deployment type for you and grab a bunch of metadata information like the publisher and so on. And then these other two concepts are very similar to, you know, what we have with other deployment types. There's a detection method, but again, with Windows 8 apps, you don't need to author the detection method. Just provide us the appx file and we'll extract it for you. What you can also do too is you can also define requirements. Again, this is the same type of requirements that you might define for an MSI application. You can define them as rich as you want, either business or technical. And then you can also, show you what that looks like. So, and then what you can also do is you can then again deploy these to users. So very similar to how you have deployed other applications, we wanted that same pattern to be the same. So what I'm going to do is hop over to the Win8 client. And on Windows 8, I'm going to go into the catalog. There it goes. And I'm going to click install. And this is where the demos get a little gutsy. So it's going to do the same thing that we do on a, you know, kind of our normal, if you will, MSI deployments. It's going to grab the policy. It's going to grab the application. It's going to then, read the application, make sure the requirements are met. And then once that's done, it's going to grab the content, which for Metro apps is that appx file and the content I showed you before. And then what's going to happen is, so it pops up in this notification for me. And then I can see here that it's installing. Fingers crossed. Ah, it installed. That is good news. So now what I can do is, let me minimize this. Oh, I forgot I can just go here. I can now see the expense app sitting here on my new modern shell experience. So that was Windows 8. Now let me show you what this looks like for Mac. So what I've done previous to this is I modeled Skype. Skype, again, new deployment type of Mac. Very similar to other deployment types. It has content. You can define a program. Has detection logic. You can define certain user experience things, such as user experience stuff. You can also define some requirement rules. What's key, though, with this deployment type that I haven't done in the past is I'm going to create a deployment here, and I'm going to require it. Just to my device, there we go. And I'm going to make it required All right, there we go. So now what I need to do is change over to the Mac itself. And what I'm showing here on the screen is very analogous to the control panel control that we have right now in Configuration Manager on a Windows client. This would be the Mac equivalent, so this is part of system preferences. I'm just kicking off a polling interval, if you will, very similar to what you would do on a Windows 7 device. So what it's doing is it's connecting up to the MP in order to get policy. So while it's doing that, one of the other things I wanted to highlight on the Mac is that we now have endpoint protection on a Mac as well. So this is the, you know, very similar functionality with what we have on a Windows 7 device. You know, the ability to, you know, secure anti-malware, you know, settings that you want enforced. Oops, sorry about that. So that was good stall time as well for this to work. So now what's happening is it's basically asking me, it's discovered that Skype should be installed on this device. So I'm just going to choose install now. So what it's doing is it's pulling content down, going through the installation process. That should take a couple minutes. And then in order to see that it worked, come over here. Then you can see Skype has now been installed on the device. I don't know why it's not done yet, though. Aha, perfect. Good. So this is working out well.
Two for two.
Yes. A little nerve-wracking. All right. Okay. Perfect. Oh. Now it's Wally's turn. So I used up all the good juice on that one, so...
So he took all the good demo mojo, so I'm going to be in trouble. So I don't have as much exciting stuff to show you in the SP1 stuff, but we will talk a little bit about it. So the second pillar that we had in that one slide that Mark showed is on unifying your infrastructure. And really what this all revolves around is trying to drive down the cost for you guys as administrators to implement a configuration manager environment. So reduce the cost for you guys to manage all these devices, whether they're Macs, whether they're mobile devices, whether they're laptops, desktop servers, whatever they are. So trying to reduce those costs for you. Also implementing some of the things like endpoint protection, as Mark just said. It's now an integrated piece of our product. It's not a separate download, a separate installer. You don't have to purchase anything different. Remediation for compliance. So remediating through software updates, as we've normally done, but also now remediating through what you guys know as desired configuration management, or DCM. We now call it compliance and settings management. So having some automatic fixing of problems. Not on this slide that also fits in there is client health. We have automated remediation of our client health features. So when we detect that one of your configuration manager clients is broken for a number of different areas, we'll automatically fix it for you, saving you all that time you have to go through and analyze your clients that are broken, running your fix-up scripts that you have yourself or you've gotten down from portals or websites, but having it integrated into the product, and making it easier for internet-based client management. So reduced infrastructure requirements. So we have this new concept, if you haven't heard of it, called a central administration site. You guys, a lot of you know, have central sites today, and a central site is nothing more than a primary site you put at the top of the hierarchy by people attaching to it. That's no longer the case in ConfigMan 2012. A central administration site is a unique site type that you have to deploy if you have to have multiple primary sites in an environment. And we'll talk about when you need those coming up. The two primary purposes for it are central administration, so you can go to the central administration site and do all your administration of your entire hierarchy if you wish to, as well as consolidated reporting. So all of your client data from all of your primary sites gets pushed up to your central administration site, and you can do reporting of all those there, so of all that data. So centralized administration, however, you can still do distributed administration if you wish. Now, primary sites, that's where your clients get managed by. So your clients get managed at primary sites. No clients can report to or roam to or be managed by a central administration site. It's purely for administration reporting. All of the clients reside at the primary sites, and they're managed there. They're assigned to the primary sites. They report inventory data to the primary site. They get policies from the primary site. And the primary reason why you would have more than one primary site in an infrastructure is scale. You have more than 100,000 clients in an environment, which the vast majority of you don't have. We've got a handful of customers that have that, but the vast majority of you have fewer than 100,000 clients. I'm sure there's some of you in the room that do have, but most of you don't have that many clients. So from there, it might be things like you want to reduce the impact of a single site failure. So if I have all 55,000 clients assigned to one primary site, it goes down, then I have limited functionality. If I have two primary sites and my clients are split between the two. One goes down, and then the other set of clients are still working. Maybe you have content regulations where you have two different countries in Europe, and you're not allowed to export content from one country to another country. So you have to go ahead and control that type of infrastructure. But a lot of the reasons that you used to use in the past for ConfigMan 2007, you don't have to do anymore, which we'll touch on here. And then the last layer of your hierarchy can be secondary sites. Secondary sites, very much like you have today for remote branch offices, where you have a pocket of users, you want to have local control of resources for them. Primarily now in ConfigMan 2012, however, the reason for having secondary sites is you need to add more distribution points to your primary site, or you want to control the client upload of traffic, so client uploading inventory data. You no longer need to have secondary sites to handle content downloads, so sending that office package that Mark talked about from your primary site down to this branch office. Today, you put a secondary site there, so you have the throttling, the scheduling capabilities with the sender. We've now basically taken the sender capabilities and put them on distribution points, so you can control when that distribution point receives content pushed from the site server, as well as throttle it and do that scheduling. You can also do content routing between secondary sites. So you could have one secondary site receive the content or the package files from your primary site, and then it can push those down to another secondary site owned by that same primary site. So a sibling secondary site. Now, in later presentations, tomorrow I believe it is, Brian and I have a presentation. We'll go through and talk about all those reasons you no longer need multiple primary sites, like decentralized administration or segmentation. Mark handles the servers and I handle the desktops, and he doesn't trust me not to deploy software updates to his servers. So today, it's not very easy to do that in 2007, so we set up different primary sites. In 2012, as Mark will show you a little bit later on here, it's very easy with the role-based administration to have him and I in the same environment, and he's very well secured and protected from me touching his servers at all, because I can't see him if you set up the stuff correctly. And Mark also mentioned we had virtual client support. So we don't care whether a computer is a physical box, whether it's a virtual box, or whether it's a VDI scenario. We don't care at all. We see it as a configuration manager client. We need to manage it. So we have management through either virtual application deployment at V, or you can go through a VDI scenario. So you want to have a Citrix XenApp scenario or a remote desktop scenario. And we're having partners build in products and technologies to allow us to give you better control and support of those VDI pooled sessions and those resources. You don't get storms of patch downloads or reporting compliance from your clients in the virtual environment, because we have randomization of some of those client activities for you. Security and compliance, as I mentioned before, endpoint protection is now built in. So this is a screenshot of the dashboard that will give you a quick shot glance in one screen in the console of what my status is for virus and malware. It'll show you what your operational status is. Hey, how many clients do I have in my collections? Are those clients protected? Or any of them have out-of-date policies? Have I also had any malware outbreaks in the last 24 hours? What's the most common malware event I've had? And I can scope that by collection, so Mark can look at his collection of users' servers, because that's all he cares about. I can look at the collection of desktops, because that's what I care about. Or I want to see, Mark just wants to see the web servers they're doing your e-commerce solution, versus I just want to see the executive laptops that we have. So you can scope that down by collection and view the appropriate information directly inside that console. All built in, nothing you have to do other than enable a role and install the client, which is part of our configuration. So all you have to do is turn on a server role and turn on a client role, and from then on, it's pretty well self-managing. And Mark and AJ are doing a presentation right after this one that is going to go in a lot more detail for you on the endpoint protection product. Software updates. The last presentation that Mark and I have today, the third one in this series, will cover software updates in a little more detail for you. But in essence, it's pretty well what you guys know today from ConfigMan 2007. We integrate with WSUS as a catalog, a repository. We go ahead and dump a catalog to metadata down for Microsoft Update. It gets synchronized down to our database. Our clients scan against that repository in WSUS. They give us back their compliance information. We determine we're out of compliance, so we go ahead and determine which updates we want to deploy, group them together in a software update group, deploy that software update group. Our clients get the patches themselves, those updates from our distribution point, our infrastructure, as opposed to going out to the internet. They get it directly from us, so you have those controls and extra capabilities you have. And then they report back to compliance level, and you do reporting of it in your admin console. One real new cool thing that we've added into software updates in Configman 2012, however, is helping you automate that monthly process. So on a patch Tuesday, today you have to synchronize your catalog, you have to go pick those updates you want to deploy, you have to manually pick them, create your update list, and deploy your update list. That all goes away if you want it to in Configman 2012. You can create automatic deployment rules that basically do the exact same thing you're doing on a patch Tuesday on a monthly basis. We'll automatically detect those new updates that have come out in the past day. We'll automatically download that metadata. We'll create a software update group for you. We'll automatically download those updates, put them on our distribution points, and deploy those updates to your clients, the software update group for you, all automated. You get to just tell us what type of updates you want, what your criteria is, category, classification, product type, date release, whatever type of category you want, and then we'll do the rest for you. So all you have to do is create your auto-deployment rules, and then create them. It's kind of a fire-and-forget thing. You create them, you launch them, and then we take care of it from then on. So help reducing that monthly maintenance overhead you have for deploying patches. And Mark will show you that in the last presentation of the day today as well. And then we have a lot better, do a lot better job of in-console monitoring and reporting, whether it's here, whether it's the software, the endpoint protection, whether it's client health, whether it's the deployment stuff Mark was doing earlier. The console now shows you great status on what your deployment process, what your compliance levels are, so that you don't have to go run reports. You can certainly still run reports through SRS. You can give management the web link to your reports. They can go view that thing if you don't want to give them the console. But you have the capability of doing all that stuff inside the console in great technology and very, very clear and easy to understand views. Settings management. Settings management is what we kind of refer to it as DCM on steroids. So some of you have used DCM in Configman 2007. I want to find out systems that are not compliant with my corporate standard. Mark mentioned stamping the registry for a corporate-based system. Well, I want to find out which computers out there don't have that registry stamp on it. So you guys can use DCM today, and you can find that type of information out. But, bless you, but it's not actionable. We give you that information in the console, you can run reports. However, that's really all you can do with it. We did add in the R3 add-on the capability of creating more easily collections based out of non-compliant stuff. Then you can deploy some software. You can advertise a program that would remediate your clients. What we've done in Configman 2012, however, is we built in remediation to the DCM product. So settings and compliance management now has the ability of automatically taking those out of compliant systems and going ahead and making them compliant again. Here in the middle section in the light blue, we show you all the different types of technology you can use to create your configuration items, whether it's Active Directory information, SQL information, registry, WMI, very, very common, file system as well. You create configuration items, the things you want to scan for, put those in a baseline, which is the basically the deployment says, hey, I want to check all these things. And then you can either report back non-compliance or compliance data, or you can go ahead and configure for remediation. And we'll get into some more of this stuff later on in the last presentation of the day. But at the very bottom, improve functionality, copy settings. You can copy configurations between configuration items or between baselines. You can generate in-console alerts. So Mark wants to know when he's got servers that he manages that don't meet the corporate standards by a registry key is missing or some application is required on your servers. It's not there. He wants to know about it. He can have the console generate an alert to say, hey, he's non-compliant because his SLA for compliant systems has dropped down below a specific level, so directly inside the console. One of the things we're adding in the Service Pack 1 release is the ability of triggering emails based off of your in-console alerts as well. You can do that today in 2012 RTM for endpoint protection, but not for the other features. Richer reporting, so a lot of different reporting in-console as well as in the reports. And then versioning. So versioning makes it very easy for you to track who's been doing what. So Mark created a configuration item and baseline that worked last week. Today he looks at the console and all of a sudden his compliance has gone from good to bad. So that alert popped up, he got the email and knows that something happened to his compliance. He goes and looks at the console, hey, why is everybody now red, non-compliant? He goes, looks at the versioning of the CI and finds out that, oh, yesterday Wally went in there and changed that configuration item. He's pointing to the wrong registry key now. So he can go back in there and either fix mine or he can actually delete mine and restore his old revision that worked. So you have great controls over who does what. We also have a ton of third-party as well as Microsoft Solution Accelerator configuration packs created for you and available up on the website. You can download with pre-configured information. You can go ahead and deploy if you wish, or you can obviously create your own. Power management, if you've been using power management in ConfigMan 2007, it's almost exactly the same. We've added a few different enhancements for you, but primarily it's the same thing as you know and hopefully love in ConfigMan 2007. First thing you do is you turn on power management so you can monitor the usage of your systems. And you do that for a period of time, maybe a week. Once you've done that gathering of data, you then do your analysis. How much power am I using? What are my user patterns? So in the top left screenshot, it's kind of hard to see, I know, but you can see the blue line is my power on the computer, and the red line, yellow lines, are the monitor and user activity. And you can see that a lot more computers are turned on than really being used a lot of the hours a day. So you go and plan in what cycles, what time frames you want to put systems to sleep when they're not being used. So you implement those policies for peak and non-peak times, how aggressive you want to be. Now, a couple of the new things that we've added here in the bullets here, VM awareness, we automatically turn off power management for virtual machines. It doesn't make sense to put a VM to sleep because the host computer is taking the power, not the VM. And then you can copy your custom settings between power policy collections. So I got a collection with custom settings today. You have to recreate that in 2007. You can now copy from another collection and implement those same power policies. And then once you've done your analysis, you apply those policies. You let that run for a period of time. Once you've done that, you can then go ahead and do your analysis to see how much money you are saving by reducing the power consumption, how much CO2 emissions you're reducing by also implementing these power policies. One other thing there in week 3, it says a new feature is end user opt-out. If you want, you could go ahead and enable the end user to exempt themselves from configuration manager applying power policies because they need to leave their laptop or their system running for remote desktop sessions in the evenings. So you could turn that on if you want to. By default, that's turned off. You could turn it on as appropriate for you. Okay, internet-based client management. Still the same great capability of managing clients over the internet for those traveling sales force that never come into your office or those home-based computers that are corporate-owned. They used to talk to your environment, but they don't VPN in, for example. You can still manage those. The biggest change here is that we've reduced your infrastructure, made it less complex than it was in 2007. In 2007, you had to have an entire site in native mode, which meant all clients, all site systems had to have PKI certificates in place. In 2012, I now just have to put PKI certs on those clients that have to be managed by the internet, as well as the site systems that those internet-based clients are going to manage or communicate with. But all my other clients in my corporation can be non-PKI based, and you self-sign certs as they would in a mixed mode environment in 2007. So allowing you to basically intermix a mixed mode and native mode in a single infrastructure, whereas today it's everybody's in native mode or everybody's in mixed mode in a single site. So I designate on a per resource basis, distribution points, software update point, et cetera, whether it's going to support HTTP or HTTPS based communications for internet or internet based clients. So much, much easier for you to configure your environment. Okay, now my little demo is going to be on settings management. Jump over there. So I'll just do a real quick demo. We'll do more demo this afternoon, or later this afternoon in the last presentation of the day. But here you can see we've got an environment where we've got 37 configuration items in our infrastructure. Some of these were imported from configuration packs created by the Solution Accelerator team or other Microsoft partners. You notice there's some in here for Mac settings and Mac shells and malware and so on. The one I'm going to demonstrate here is Smart Screen Filter. So this is an Internet Explorer feature that allows you to catch phishing sites. And our corporate standard is that that smart screen filter has to be turned on, has to be enabled. So if I want to go look at the properties of this, you can see that the setting we're looking at, it's a registry value-based setting. And it's going to go ahead and look at HKEY current user, software, Microsoft Internet Explorer phishing filter is the registry value. And what we're saying is that that value must equal a 1. A 1 turns on that value. Means that that phishing filter is enabled. So before I go any further, we're going to go ahead and switch over to our client. We'll verify that our client has that enabled, and then we're going to go ahead and disable it. So Mark successfully installed his application. We'll go to Internet Explorer options. We'll go to advanced. We'll go down here, enable smart screen filter is enabled, as we would expect. I'm going to go ahead and turn that off. Now we'll go back over to our site, and we're going to go ahead and deploy this configuration item. So you create your configuration items. Traditionally, you have more than one CI you want to deploy at a time, but for this scenario, we're going to just use one. You create a baseline. A configuration baseline is a grouping of configuration items you want to scan on clients at one point in time. We've already got one created here called malware cleanup. If I go and show members, that'll show you all the configuration items that are members or being deployed by this configuration baseline. You see smart screen filter. So I put those in my baseline, and that's all a baseline is a grouping. You just list what configuration items you want to deploy or software updates or other configuration baselines. And then I have to deploy that baseline. So I go to configuration baselines, I go to malware cleanup, I do a deploy. Just like Mark was deploying software, you deploy configuration baselines. And I want to say remediate. Remediate non-compliant rules when supported. If my client has that registry value and it's not set to a 1, make it a 1. And you can generate alert. We mentioned that. So I want to generate alert when my compliance is not 90%. And you see the default is give me a day to try and get all my clients scanned and reporting compliance. And if not, then go ahead and generate alert. I'll go ahead and set this to today to our current time. I think it adjusts for us automatically. My clock says 11:01 because I'm still on Seattle time. You can also generate an operations manager alert if you want. If you have the operations manager management pack or monitoring pack installed, you can generate alert there as well. And then you can rerun this on a scheduled basis if you wish to. My collection I want to go ahead and scan. I can do user collections or I can do system collections. I'll just do this one system collection and kick that off. That creates policy for the client. The client's going to go ahead and in its normal policy time frame is going to go ahead and pull that down. We're not going to wait. We're going to go ahead and force it to pull policies. So we'll go back here to our client computer. We'll go to configuration manager. Oops. Oh, I did switch. Okay. And we'll pull policies. Run now. Give that a moment to think. And what that's going to do, it's going to go ahead and add this baseline here to my client computer. So let me do a refresh and see if it's got it there. I may have pull policies too soon. That happens every once in a while. So let me pull policies again. Normally, I would look at a log file to see when the policy has been created on the site end. There we go. My policy is here. My baseline is here. By default, because of this VDI scenario, we don't want all clients scanning and reporting compliance at the same time. So there's a randomized delay factor in here before the client actually is going to evaluate and return. So I'm going to go ahead and force it so I don't have to wait that up to hour time frame. So I'll click evaluate. And now it says compliant. It says we're compliant. I just go show report real quick. It shows me that I am compliant. And then down at the bottom of the report, it shows me what it did. And it says my registry value previously was a 0. It is now a 1. So if I go back into Internet Explorer options, go back to my advanced tab, and you see that enable smart screen filters turn back on. Now, if my client hasn't reported compliance yet, I go back to my server end of things. I'll show you this real quick, and then I'll turn it back over to Mark here for a moment. Go to deployments, my malware cleanup. If I go ahead and do a summarization, if my client has not reported back state compliance information quickly enough already, then I'll be able to show you what the alert looks like. So I'll go ahead and do a refresh here. And we'll see we're unknown, so we should be okay. Now if I go to assets and compliance, go to compliance settings, and here's an example of an alert. This alert's saying, hey, Mark, your systems there aren't compliant because you're missing whatever it is you're scanning for. So this is an in-console alert. In the SP1 release, I'll be able to do an email subscription to this so I can get an email when this alert pops up as well. Now that I actually have remediated my client, the next time my client sends in state message and I summarize it, this alert will go away automatically because I will now be compliant, provided I hit my 90%, which I only have one client targeted, so I'm either 0 or 100, one of the two. But we won't wait for that because it'll take it a couple of minutes to send in compliance data. So that's just a real quick little demo of what you can do with your compliance information. And last thing I'll talk about here is some new stuff we're adding in SP1, and I'll hand it back off to Mark. So flexible hierarchy management. You guys saw what our hierarchy looks like at CAS and primary sites. Well, let's say I start with a primary site, a standalone primary, and I decide I really do need to have another primary site. Today in 2012, I can't join that existing primary to a hierarchy. It's an all or nothing. I either join the hierarchy from the start, or I can't be in the hierarchy at all. So now we're going to allow you to, if I am in that scenario where I installed a standalone primary site, I decide now I really do need a hierarchy, we'll let you install a brand new CAS and join this one primary site to your brand new CAS to set up a brand new hierarchy without having to recreate all your information. What we're also going to do is, let's say the scenario is both Mark and I have installed standalone primary sites. This new hierarchy flexibility thing is only going to let one of us join a hierarchy. So Mark's got more information, he'll go ahead and create the CAS, he'll join that CAS, I'm stuck by myself. Well, I want to join his hierarchy. I can't join his hierarchy, but what we can do now is do a migration from one 2012 site to another 2012 site. So we can migrate my data, my information, my objects over to his hierarchy. Then I can uninstall my site, reinstall it, and join the hierarchy from the beginning as I install my site. So it gives me more flexibility. We're also going to give you controls over SQL replication. So what data gets replicated, when it gets replicated, and how much data gets replicated. So unless you, maybe Mark doesn't want his hardware inventory information from his primary site being replicated up the CAS. But I, at the central administration site, still want to run reports that includes his hardware inventory data. So we'll use SQL distributed views to go down to his primary site, get the data we need, so we can do the reporting centralized up at the primary site, whereas my, or the central site, whereas my primary site client data has already been replicated up. So on a site-by-site basis, you can choose what data to replicate. You can also put in the controls over what do you want to compress data. You can also control, kind of like you do with senders today, when that data transfer occurs. You have no controls over this information in 2012 RTM. Software updates, the two new things we're adding there, fall back to Windows Update, Microsoft Update for content. So today, if you're a Configuration Manager client, you always get your patches from Configuration Manager. You never go to Windows Update. In SP1, you'll be able to default to go into our distribution point and then go to Windows Update as a fallback in case your distribution point's not available with your updates. Plus, we'll allow you now to synchronize your catalog up to 3 times a day for definition updates. Endpoint Protection releases catalogs, definition updates 3 times a day. So now we want to have our software update technology be able to support that so that Mark can create his automatic deployment rules to download those definition updates for endpoint protection 3 times a day to keep his systems up to date. Today, you can only do it once a day. Endpoint protection, Mark will show you in the last presentation of the day today, real-time actions. You can force your clients to perform some real-time actions in the console. So I know an outbreak has occurred. I want you to download a new definition right now and not wait for client policy polling intervals. Kind of like those, what some people call them, client center, system center, client center utilities or whatever to kick off policies, kind of that type of functionality built in. And then the ability of supporting user profile and data management for client-side caching, roaming user profiles, and folder redirection through Configuration Manager as opposed to having to have group policy to implement those settings for you. So here, I talked about this, but here's a screenshot for a little animation for you of this hierarchy expansion. So here's Mark's standalone primary site with 10,000 clients. Oops, I need a hierarchy. He can now install a brand new CAS and join that one primary site to that hierarchy. I also had my own primary site, whether it's a merger or we both individual standalone primary sites. So in my scenarios, I can't join the hierarchy directly, but what I can do now is migrate my information from my standalone primary over to Mark's hierarchy. Then I can decommission, basically flatten and reload my box and join the hierarchy during my setup process. So do the migration very much like we have today from 2007 to 2012, just between 2012 sites now. With that, we'll kick it back over to Mark for simplify administration.
Great, thanks, Wally. So as you've seen in the demos, we've just redone the console in 2012. Really what we tried to focus on was just making sure that the scenarios could be completed end-to-end, regardless of where you started them. So I know a frustration point in 2007 was that if you wanted to accomplish something, you kind of had to know where the entry point was. You couldn't, let's say, invoke the same action from the same object, regardless of where in the node structure it may have shown up. So what we really tried to do, again, at just more of a macro level, was just sort of modernize the UI, try to really put in place some true end-to-end scenarios. One of the other things we drove home, too, was that we wanted administrators to be able to complete all of the operational tasks within the console. So we know in Config Manager 2007, a lot of times you'd have to rely on reports in order to, let's say, troubleshoot or really check on the deployment or whatever those scenarios might be. And what we wanted to do was make it so that you could stay within the console, you could truly complete the complete end-to-end scenario, not just bits and pieces of it, where you might have to go outside the console. Role-based administration, this is something that Wally talked about, and really what I'll do is I'll kind of hop in here and show you a demo of what that looks like. So this is a scenario for folks that have Wallys around that apparently mess up configuration items, so you can then secure it in such a way. One of the common things I hear from customers is that they have a lot of primary sites, and one of the main reasons they have primary sites is so that they can get into a delegated admin scenario. I've heard some really bad tales, 10, 20, 30 type of primary sites they might have, just to be able to map a primary site to a given business unit. With role-based administration, you don't have to do that anymore. It's all done through software. You basically create what you see at the bottom of the screen here. You create these roles. You then have scopes. You can kind of think of scopes as somewhat analogous to the instance level permissions that we had. Let's say, for example, the CI scenario, I want that to be a server scope and not a desktop scope. And then the other main piece we have at the bottom, which is around collection limiting. And that's how we secure resources. And what's really kind of neat about this functionality is that it creates a sandbox. It really allows an administrator to be able to say, let's just say I'm the top level admin. I can basically give Wally a collection called all desktops. And then what Wally can do is he can actually create new collections that he, to his heart's content. He can even mess up the query logic. He can basically say, give me all systems in the discovery table. And what will happen is we'll do an intersection between the collection I gave him, all desktops, and whatever query he may have wrote. That way, the higher level admin can feel confident that they're truly delegating the right level of permissions. It's not just about objects, but it's also about securing the resources. So let me show you how we pull this off. Okay. So what I have here in the administration is the ability to define administrative users. So right now we just have a simple administrator. Full admin can do everything. And the thing I want to show you really quick, and you'll have to hopefully remember this as I show you the demo, is that I got an app list here, which has tons of applications. I then have a set of collections, a bunch of different collections. And really kind of the intent here is once I set up limited permissions for an administrator, you're going to see this stuff radically shrink down. So that was a little bit of a preamble. Now let me show you what it looks like to create an administrative user. So what I'll do is I will define a new one. So I had pre-created, just one second. Oops. I pre-created a user called Meg. Come on, console. The irony of this is... AD getting me. So while that's waiting to come back, I'll just tell you what I'm going to do next is, so for a given user, you have a set of security roles. Security roles are very similar to class level. So what we do out of box is we provide you a set of roles. But each role has many different objects. So for example, I might be an app administrator. That will give you rights to objects that are relevant for a role such as an app administrator. You can see collections, you can see apps, but you can't see updates. And then conversely, you might have the updates administrative role where you can't see apps, but you can see updates and you can see collections. So we create these roles really to try to help map an actual administrative role that you might have with inside your environment. So what I'm going to do is select an app administrator, and in essence, that will give me rights to apps and collections and a few other things. Then down here is where I can define the scope. So again, I may not want Meg to have rights to all applications or all collections. So what I can do is really just reduce and get rid of all of her scope. I can then pick what type or what resources I want her to have access to. You can define multiple. I could define users, device collections. But just for this demo, I'll pick North America. Let's just say she's the North American admin. And then what I can do is define applications she can have rights to. So I'll just pick North America here. And the way that you manage this is that you have the sort of tag, if you will, of security scopes, and then you can apply security scopes on an object. It's very similar to Outlook, how you just right-click and hit categorize. You can just hit right-click and apply scope. And that will, in essence, tag these objects in such a way that we know that it's part of a certain scope that you have, such as a North American admin. Okay, so now that that's set up, I need to launch another version of the console here. Oops, sorry about that. No, selected the wrong thing for some reason.
You wanted to deploy IE.
Yeah. There we go.
You wanted to run it as a different user.
Oh, I did admin.
Yeah.
It's always easier when people aren't watching you do this. So if everyone could invert your eyes.
Close your eyes.
Every time I do the shift right click, I end up messing up this demo too. So. Okay, so what that's doing is it's logging in now as Meg. And what you can tell here is that the actual nodes have been sort of stripped away. You don't see a lot of sort of extra information. So this can be great as you just don't have to worry about training certain people. Like, oh, what's the OSD node for? And you just don't have to worry about that anymore. You basically take that out of the view for these down-level administrators. So it really just simplifies the messaging you might have to provide them. The other thing, too, is let me show you what the app list looks like. So with applications, it's a reduced set. So it wasn't that page-long view that you saw before. What we're doing is we're really just returning apps that I had previously tagged with a security scope of North America. And then for collections, again, if you remember, there was multiples that were there. Now what I have is this sandbox collection. This is the one that all of my collections now have to be derived from. You'll notice it's read-only. So I can't go in there and I can't change the membership rules and be able to increase my scope. And also with a collection, you now have to create collections and they always have to be limited. What that does is it forms that understanding in the system of what to do the intersection with. So me being Meg, whenever I create a new collection, I have to have it limited by another collection that I've been given rights to. That way we do the intersection to make sure that you're not increasing your scope of control. Okay, go back here. Okay, so with operating system deployment, I'll kind of touch on this really quick. What we ended up doing with OSD is not major changes with Config Manager 2012, GA, if you will. We've made some significant changes when we talk about the SP1 scope. A lot of that we tried to put under covers so that you don't necessarily have to relearn some things. You know, kind of some key takeaways here, just in the interest of time, is the USMT 4.0 native support is big. That way you can just be able to manage that directly inside the task sequence editor. You don't have to worry about that. We also put in place some additional features you can see on the right, such as multicast support. When you get into SP1, what we increased was our BitLocker story. So if you remember, we have sort of some options around what type of configuration options we support for BitLocker. We now support TPM plus PIN. We also support the new Windows 8 feature called USpace BitLocker. That's a great feature for just provisioning time. You no longer have to wait for the entire hard drive to be encrypted. Instead, what you're encrypting is the data as it lands on the disk itself. So the actual enablement of this feature is extremely fast. The other thing that we did too was we now support pre-stage media where you can provide additional content types. So in the past, you were able in pre-stage media to define just a WIM image. Now what you can do is define applications, drivers, packages. This scenario is great just in general. It was a very common ask that we got about, hey, how come you made it so limited? Why did you just have pre-stage media just for WIM? So it's a great just general tool for being able to do a remote install of an operating system. But it's also very useful when you think about scenarios like Windows to Go. Windows to Go is a scenario where you want to get as much of the content as you can on the device so that that provisioning experience is very fast. And the reason it's fast is because you don't have to pull that content over the wire. Client health. So big investment for us, and this is something we just want everyone in this room to just not care about anymore, is really putting mechanics in our process, like remediation, so that our underlying configuration manager client is reliable. So in here, in the console, we have a dashboard. You can be able to see the health of how your clients are doing, be able to report actionable information to you in the console. And really what our main goal was, we just want to take that problem that we knew existed in 2007 and just make it go away. And I think this might be the last slide. Hopefully I'm not, well, there's one more. Is asset intelligence. We've made some levels of improvements in SP1. Probably the thing that's best kind of highlighted on this slide, though, just in the interest of time, is with inventory. So with inventory, we put a MOF editing experience with inside the product so that you can kind of quickly go in and select the classes that you're interested in getting information off of. Very easy to use, very intuitive to be able to import and export those settings as well. Remote control is back. So, I'm sorry, not remote control is back, but the ability to unlock a machine with Control-Alt-Delete is back. That was a major ask that we had that went away in 2007. So this really kind of helps close that issue that we've had before. And for SP1, what we're going to support too is PowerShell. So with PowerShell, our scope is too long to list. I'm talking lots of commandlets, too many to put in probably this entire deck. But our goal was to really look at all of the tasks that you can do in the administrative console that end up talking to the back end, if you will. The ability to create an application, deploy an application, delete an application. We wanted to take all of those type of tasks and be able to supply commandlets for you to be able to perform those actions all through PowerShell. The other goal that we have, too, is to make sure that as we do this work, that it makes sense to an administrator and it makes sense to somebody who knows PowerShell. Anyone who's familiar with our SDK realizes that maybe some of the objects that we've surfaced in our SDK are not very admin-friendly. They're not necessarily the same type of objects that we would surface. So we've kind of really tried to embrace PowerShell as being more of a admin-focused, admin automation type of scenario and making sure that the concepts that we surface are very similar to what you see in the console today. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Wally, and he's going to tell you how we get to 2012.
And in my 37 seconds, I got more than 37 seconds. Yes, so Mark and I have shown you a bunch of cool things in ConfigMan 2012 that hopefully you knew some of those, you may not have, but you got to get to where you are today to where we want you to be, well, actually right now, since the product is available, but you got to get from where you are to where we want you to be. So that's a migration process. When you guys moved from SMS 2003 to ConfigMan 2007, we gave you no tools to move your objects from your old infrastructure, your SMS 2003, over to your ConfigMan 2007 environment. The only way you got to keep those objects is if you did an in-place upgrade, which worked great. But if you did a side-by-side because you had a hardware refresh or you needed OS changes or just wanted to clean up and start all over, you lost all that old data you had, all your old objects. So now what we're going to give you in 2012 is the ability of assisting you with that migration of your administrative objects, the stuff we didn't do for you in the past. So in the console, you have the ability of saying, I want to take this collection. I want to take this package. I want to take this advertisement. I want to take this software update list, this OS deployment task sequence, whatever it is. I want to take these objects and move them over from my old infrastructure, recreate them in the brand new infrastructure. You cannot do an in-place upgrade of ConfigMan 2007 to ConfigMan 2012. It is a side-by-side migration. If you want to do an in-place upgrade, it's called wipe and load, or FDISC. So you get to start the whole thing over, but you lose all your data. So now if you do your side-by-side, you have your existing 2007 infrastructure, you stand up your brand new 2012 infrastructure, you now migrate those objects across from the old to the new, so your new one looks basically like the old one, just in that new fancy admin console we have with all the new capabilities. We want to assist with the migration of clients. So when we migrate clients over, we want to not have them lose their advertisement history. So you don't want to have all those old advertisements rerun because you've migrated over the packages, the programs, the advertisements. So you want to make sure we assist you with that so that you don't rerun all those advertisements. Basically, we're going to uninstall the old client, 2007, and install it as a new 2012 client, but keep that advertisement history for you. You can do this migration of clients through any supported client deployment method you want, whether it's push, whether it's software distribution upgrade, very likely the case, whether it's group policy based, whether it's software update point based, whether it's manual, a logon script, whatever you want to do. We don't care how you get them there, just that when you do, we're going to help you with that advertisement history stuff. We want to minimize your WAN impact. What that means is you're going to have both those infrastructures running for a period of time. It's not going to be an overnight replacement migration from 2007 to 2012. You're going to have to keep administering and monitoring and managing your 2007 environment for a period of time. Well, let's say you want to have a package, an advertisement brought over from 2007 to 2012, and you then deploy that to 2012 clients, clean clients that you have. Well, they're going to need those package source files. You don't want to have to redistribute that content to a 2012 DP. Instead, what we allow you to do is to share your 2007 DP with those package files on it with your 2012 clients. So your 2012 clients can go get that content that's already sitting on your 2007 distribution point. Then when you're all done with your migration, all the clients are brought over, all your objects are brought over, you can then upgrade that DP from ConfigMan 2007 to ConfigMan 2012, again, keeping that content in place so it doesn't have to be repushed across the wire. So greatly, greatly helping you out there. maximize the reusability of your X64 hardware. If you haven't heard, everything in ConfigMan 2012, for the most part, is 64-bit. Almost all of your server roles, we also support 64-bit clients. The only couple of things we support in 32-bit are distribution points, because we know you have a big investment in 32-bit DPs today. 32-bit clients we still support, and the admin console runs on 32-bit boxes. Everything else is 64-bit based, so all of your other site system roles. But let's say you don't have the ability of standing up a brand new environment. So I can't stand up a brand new 2012 environment. I only got one set of hardware. We have a toolkit here that will actually let you take your 2007 environment, virtualize it, reformat and recreate that 2007 site server as a Hyper-V box running Windows Server 2008 R2. You install 2012 on it, and we put your 2007 environment virtualized in that same computer. So you got both environments running on the same box, and you can then do your migration from 2007 to 2012, all on a single piece of hardware. And assist with flattening your hierarchy. We've talked a little bit about, not a whole lot here, but in other sessions we will, flattening the hierarchy. You got that three layers at maximum, reducing the number of primary sites, secondary sites that you have. We want to assist you with that. So in the migration technology, if you have a very complex hierarchy of in 2007 today, you can map those multiple primary sites over to a single site in 2012. So help you getting those objects from multiple sites over into a single site or a much reduced or flattened hierarchy in 2012. So that's all part of the in-console migration technology that we have. We actually have a presentation on that Wednesday morning, and we've had a couple of, I had a lab on it yesterday, a workshop on it, got another one tomorrow morning and one Thursday morning. We'll walk you through that entire process. As you're doing this migration, we have two different types of migration jobs. Jobs are the command saying, hey, I want you to do this. I want you to recreate these collections. I want you to recreate these objects. You can move by collection. So Mark brings his collection of servers over right away so we can start managing the servers. You can also go by object type. John manages OSD. I want to make sure that he gets all the OSD objects migrated over right away so we can start working with OSD. We talked about the reusability of your content, your distribution point sharing, and the being able to upgrade the DPs already. And Mark mentioned the MOF editor we have now. SMS def MOF file goes away. You have a nice cool editor inside the console to modify that SMS def MOF. You can also import your existing SMS def MOF file from 2007 into the new instance of that in ConfigMan 2012 using that same editor utility. So you don't lose your investment in your hardware inventory today. You can just port that directly over to ConfigMan 2012, even though we no longer have that file anymore. Last couple of things for you guys. We got a couple minutes left. Nice thing is, we're in this room for the rest of the day, so we don't have to get off stage right when the timer goes off, because we're here for till 6 p.m. tonight, until the expo reception. So you guys can hang around and ask questions. Flatten your hierarchy where possible. So we'll talk more about that in tomorrow afternoon session on the deployment overview, talk about the hierarchy, but you're going to have a reduced hierarchy in some cases. So look at where you can reduce sites today. Start planning for, I don't really need the site sitting down there in Miami. That could be part of the Orlando site. We can merge it with Tampa, St. Pete. So look at those spots where you can do that. Look at those spots where you can get rid of secondary sites and just put a DP in there now. So have all that information available to you and start working on that already. I already mentioned we're 64-bit based, so look at 64-bit operating system, Windows Server 2008 as a minimum, and then SQL Server 2008. Nothing less than that, and getting everything 64-bit. If you have remote locations with a very small number of clients and Windows 7 capable, you might want to invest in branch cache today or start looking at it, because we support branch cache in 2007 SP2, as well as in ConfigMan 2012. So a great way without even having to put a ConfigMan DP out there. You can use branch cache to download content and distribute it locally. Start integration with SQL Server reporting services today. In the 2012 version, there's no more reporting point. All your reports are done through SRS. So start getting familiar with how reporting services works. So in ConfigMan 2007 R2 and R3, you can already integrate with SQL Server reporting services. So start learning that technology today, because that's the only way you can do your reporting inside ConfigMan 2012. The next couple are migration specific. Avoid mixing user and devices in a single collection. So today in 2007, you have a collection that has a rule for users, it has a rule for devices. We don't support that in 2012. So break those apart if you want to move those rules over. And then make sure your package source files always use UNC paths and not direct paths. So if your package source file in 2007 package says C:\apps, guess what? When you migrate that package over, it's going to say C:\apps. And you probably don't have C:\apps with that content on your 2012 site server. Remember, it's side by side. So if you have UNCPass, \\server\apps, then that \\server\apps-share will still be valid in the new environment. Summary, don't have time to go through everything here, but you can see what you had in the 2007 R3 space, what we've added in 2012, which is all the stuff that Mark and I talked about today, and then we hit a bunch of the stuff that's coming in the Service Pack 1 release. So look forward to those things coming up.
So, yeah, as Wally said, we'll be around for questions. You know, thanks for coming to this. And
here's a slide of related content presentations throughout the rest of the week, including the next two today. And then there's also a whole bunch of hands-on labs downstairs that you can play around with. Thank you all. And if you have questions, come on up.
Thanks.